From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with a local and statewide news update. Cyril George was a leader in the Beaver Clan of Angoon and was known for his contributions to local and regional politics. He was also known by those he was closest to as a photographer. When he died 6 years ago at the age of 92, he left behind a vast photo collection that is thought to be the largest ever made by someone who was Tlingit. As KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, George's family recently donated those photos with the goal of making them available to the public.
Cyril George didn't go many places without his camera.
Everywhere Cyril went in Angoon and maybe other places, he always had a camera hanging over his neck.
That's former state senator and lifelong Angoon resident Albert Kukesh. He says George took pictures at basketball games, local celebrations, and weddings.
Every native event that I am familiar with, he was there, and very rarely without his cameras.
George documented everyday life in the Admiralty Island Village. In one black and white photo from his collection, three women wearing regalia pose near the shore. In another, a man disembarks from a boat. When George passed away in 2014, the Tlingit elder and founding Sea Alaska board member left behind a collection of over 4,000 photos. Last month, his family donated that collection to the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Chuck Smythe is the nonprofit's director of culture and history.
Because he wants these to be used and seen by many people. You know, it's quite an amazing collection. 75 years of photos spanning the 1920s to the 1990s.
Right now, the photos are sitting in boxes. They'll have to be wrapped in plastic for a month before they can even enter the Institute's archive. That's to make sure they don't bring any mold in with them. And people will have to wait until the archive opens again to view them. It's currently closed because of the coronavirus pandemic. But eventually, Smythe says, they hope to digitize the collection and put it online to broaden its reach and to collect caption information.
We can't wait too long because we want to make sure that any of the older people who would be able to reach back in their memory the early photos are still with us.
Smythe says having such extensive documentation of life in a traditional, tight-knit community where many people live subsistence lifestyles has great historical and cultural significance.
You know, you can't put a price on photos taken from somebody from within the culture, and in this case, from within the community as well, because he sees things very differently than an outsider would, and has that history of attachment to the land.
Kukesh, who considered George a mentor and close friend, says the collection has personal significance for him and his community. It will help bring back memories of people and events long forgotten. But he also sees the collection as important statewide, nationally, and even internationally.
Well, I want people to see those pictures from Angoon from people who live in Germany or live in Anchorage, and they could see an Angoon through Cyril George's eyes, that they could see the history of what we had and how we grew and how we survived.
He says he's grateful to the family that the photos didn't end up collecting dust in a forgotten drawer. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
The debate over a permanent home for Juneau's cold weather shelter was put to rest last night when the assembly rejected all of the proposals for new locations. At the committee meeting, assembly members reviewed a list of properties the city could buy with CARES Act funding to serve as an emergency cold weather shelter. The city has been temporarily running a shelter out of the Juneau Arts and Culture Center since March. Assemblymember Lauren Jones made the motion to keep the shelter at the center.
More information about a couple of buildings is not going to give us any more information about what we ought to do.
The assembly decided unanimously to keep the shelter where it is until next April. Jones argued that moving the shelter would be a waste of money and staff time, and that it wouldn't address underlying issues of homelessness in Juneau. When the city last counted the homeless population in January, there were 46 unsheltered people sleeping outdoors and 69 people staying at the emergency shelter.
So to me, operating the shelter as it is, at the place that it is, gives staff time to look at those numbers and come up with an idea about what it's going to take. But it can't be a solution done in 2 months.
Jones pointed out that the number of other projects are in the works to address housing needs for the homeless. Juneau's Housing First facility in Lemon Creek recently doubled in size. The Glory Hall is making plans to move its downtown homeless shelter to the Mendenhall Valley, hopefully sometime next year. But Jones said that even with roughly 40 people staying in the emergency shelter on most nights, there are still others sleeping on the street downtown. So buying a building might not be the right solution.
You're asking the wrong question about the wrong information, and you're going to get the wrong answer.
The city's two top contenders for the new shelter were the Bill Ray Center on F Street and a warehouse on Willoughby Avenue. Some neighbors in the nearby Flats neighborhood took an issue with Bill Ray Center, saying it would bring the homeless population into an area with schools and families. A virtual meeting last week saw mixed testimony from about 20 residents from all over Juneau weighing in on the list of potential sites for the shelter. In past years, the shelter only operated between November and April on nights when the temperature was below freezing. It stayed open through the summer this year due to an increased need for housing during the pandemic. St. Vincent de Paul Society has a contract with the city to operate the emergency shelter at the JAAC until April. And it looks like there's a growing cottage industry for private tutoring in Juneau. In Facebook groups for local parents, parents are looking for tutors and tutors are offering their services. This summer, one young woman saw an opportunity to scale up her solo side hustle. Milagro Darby now runs a five-person tutoring business called Valley Girl Tutoring. Darby shared some insights about how families are handling distance learning with KTOO's Jeremy Shea.
Milagro Darby says she started tutoring school-aged kids on the side while she was a freshman at the University of Alaska Southeast about 4 or 5 years ago. When she started a full-time job, she put tutoring mostly on hold. But then the COVID-19 pandemic landed in Juneau, and she saw an opportunity.
So I started putting some feelers out there of like, hey, what are people needing right now? Like, what are they looking for? And can I fill that gap?
She launched her full-service tutoring business this summer. Initially, she saw that families were interested in creating small learning pods. That is, small social bubbles for kids to be kids with each other without introducing a lot of pandemic risk. But she's found parents have been indecisive about committing to a pod.
Now people are like, well, we're doing this distance education, and if we could just get a private tutor, I think that would be more efficient, and I don't want my kids interacting with other kids right now. And so the dynamic has kind of changed a little bit.
She has four tutors working with her. Right now, she has two students in tutoring, five others she's in the process of matching with the tutor, and more leads pending. She thinks there's a big demand for tutoring, and that will grow as parents and students get frustrated with distance learning.
People are going to start looking for alternatives, and the alternatives are homeschooling, basically. And if you can't teach your kid, then who is? So I do think that there's room for other people to establish if they wanted to, because I think Juneau's not doing a very great job right now of the distance program.
She says, even though kids tend to be comfortable with technology, distance education is still a new thing for them.
You know, and I classify myself in this, I'm Gen Z, just because we grew up on the internet and we grew up on phones and media and technology does not make it easier for us to understand or learn online. Having a 15-minute session online teaching you this new algebraic concept with 30 problems due in 2 days is not efficient.
Darby says she's seeing students struggle with staying on task and managing their time, like one ninth grader she's working with.
She doesn't know how to do that at home. She knows how to do that at school, but she doesn't know how to do that at home. So learning how to prioritize your schedule and what you need to do, manage your schedule, manage your time. It's a skill that you have to learn that these kids have never had a reason to learn yet, you know? All of that kind of gets merged into tutoring.
Darby says it's weird having her business come together because of the pandemic.
I'm growing this new thing over here and I'm trying to make it really successful and great for these people, and the world is burning down.
Darby says she's grateful it's working out and that she's helping the community despite the poor circumstances. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
While western U.S. states were suffering from hazy red skies from wildfires, Alaska on Monday was dealing with an air quality problem born a century ago. Strong southerly winds picked up loose ash from the 1912 volcanic eruption, sending an ash cloud about 4,000 feet into the sky. This is KTOO News.